Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
When I was Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. This is Bill and George. Awfully glad that you can join us tonight. Or today, Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, a man who cuts his pizza with scissors, George P. Fraser. Why do you do that, George?
That is not true. I got one of those.
Yeah, but, okay. Then somebody told me bad information.
They did.
Yeah. So you use one of those little pizza rollers.
I do.
For some reason, I thought you were with the scissors cutting your pizza.
No, I'm a huge Papa Murphy guy.
Okay. Is that pre-cut then?
No.
It's not pre-cut?
Oh, no. It's the best.
You got to do it yourself.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm willing to go that extra length, Bill.
Okay. So you're not going to cut corners, is what you're saying.
No.
Yeah. Well, I love that about George Fraser, because you're not willing to cut corners.
I'm all in. And in the winter, pizza is an essential food group for George.
But you're not addicted to pizza, are you? Or are you?
No.
Do you need a little intervention?
But I think, you know, once the jaws get warmed up, they keep going.
They do, don't they?
Yeah.
It's hard to...
You
there's
get
no off switch,
into a
is
rhythm.
There? Yeah.
I made a mistake of buying Cheerios, Frosted Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, you can eat those morning and night. You know, you get the crunch going. Do you remember Cheerios when you were a kid?
Of course I do. Of course I do.
Were you a Frosted Flakes guy?
I was not a Frosted Flakes guy, but I liked Frosted Flakes.
Sugar Pops.
I was more of a Sugar Pops guy, yeah.
Remember Sugar Chris?
Yeah.
Can't get enough soup, Sugar Chris, the little... Guy kind of reminded me of, I won't say it.
Okay.
Roll on.
Were you dealing with the sugar addiction when you were a kid?
I still am.
Well, okay.
Love the white powder, baby.
You wouldn't have considered it an addiction, though, as a kid, right?
Bill, my family owned a candy company. We had a manufacturing plant.
You're not telling me this for the first time. I do know this.
No, you wake up, you give little George, and I don't recommend this, George, not George, to the audience. You give him some hot cocoa, some sugar crisp, some grape juice, and you put the TV on. Bad. I turned out a lot better than I could have.
I would agree.
It was my first addiction.
I would agree. You had trouble brewing back then.
The potential for greatness.
Yeah.
And it was no doubt it was my first addiction.
Yeah.
And I know now, I've been doing the Valentine jelly beans by Starburst. I'll give you a free endorsement. And next week, after Valentine's Day, is the highlight of my year, Russell Stover Pecton Bird Eggs.
Okay. You
but
like
I can tell I'm a little hungover when I get up after I've eaten sugar.
Okay.
So I've got a great thing. It's like biting the dog, you know, dog that beat you.
Yeah.
Have jelly beans with your coffee. Gets the sugar intake up, and then you're good to go. It's like having a shot with your breakfast.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I think for most people, remember when we had the Epstein on, Dr. Epstein?
Yeah, Rhona Epstein.
And she talked about salty and sweet.
Yes.
General Mills, another plug, has the Nature Valley deals that are both, you know?
They satisfy on a couple levels, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
But they're real hard to stop, and I think a lot of addicts, their first addiction would have been sugar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well,
you think back of some of the candy that was available to us and some of the sweet treats. I think parents today are a little bit more conscious about what kind of snacks and treats they're giving their kids.
Yeah, a lot of things aren't as good as when we were kids, Bill.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what Ryan's snack was growing up. What was his snack of choice? But maybe we'll ask him. Ryan, what was your snack of choice?
Are you talking cereal or just anything?
What's cereal?
Oh, my gosh. Banana Nut Crunch is what I remember.
All right.
Okay. What about candy?
You know, I probably ate a lot of it. Chocolate, Skittles. Yeah.
Skittles anything? Are addicting, aren't they?
Yeah.
What about now?
Those stuff still sound good right now.
Yeah. Good man.
So in other words, we just got ourselves another guest for Real Recovery.
We could, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if we have a guest fallout, we can have Ryan do the show.
You really have to give him a thumbs up for the honesty there. He could have dodged that.
Yeah.
But you're very disciplined about what you eat.
I am, but that's...
The only addiction there would probably be caffeine, right?
I do like my caffeine, yes. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, and I think we spent way too much time on this, but it was fun. I even used to mail in the stuff off the back, you know, the little prizes. But I think that's kind of where it starts. And for me, there's no question my first addiction was sugar.
Of course. And I think for just about everybody, unless they've got, you know, parents or there's a medical condition that prevents kids from access to sugar, there we have our first introduction to a substance, a food group that, well, it's not a group, but a food that we...
Got it. I think
we return to time and time again. And
I
we
think
look...
candy's a food group. I do.
Okay,
but I think the one thing it does is it teaches you that by ingesting something, it changes how you feel.
Yes. And that's the issue with addiction is people want to change the way they feel. And what we want to do on Real Recovery is always encourage people to do healthy, productive ways of changing how you feel.
That's what I'm all about. Healthy, productive ways of changing how you feel.
I should have run this by you in advance.
No, this is great. But, you know, you talk about it, and parents today are more conscious. We know more about sugar and those things, but we've got another addictive object called cell phones and technology that you and I did not have to struggle
with. That's true. That's true.
Until we became adults.
Yeah. I heard a statistic recently that a person will look at their cell phone on average 320 times a day. Now, how do you do it that many times? Well, you glance down at it, and you're still holding it, and you look up for a second, then you glance back down. And if you just track how many times that happens in a day, it's a big number.
Well, you know, I would have argued with you when I first heard that, okay? But I lost my cell phone one time, and I panicked. Total panic, and I thought, something's wrong here. So I Googled it. That's how an addict does it. You do another drug. I'm really dependent on Google to do my thinking for me. And I know everything I read is accurate. But yeah. But here's where we go into recovery, and I want to do a transition here. I need to look at the steps and work my program on my eating. It works for anything. And We do have people, we don't mean to minimize or mock this. I think the eating disorders are the hardest addiction to treat, Bill, because you have to eat every day. Now, I'm a recovering alcoholic cocaine addict. I don't need to have a shot and do a line of Coke every day to survive, but you do need to eat. And so I believe that's the hardest addiction to treat right there, because you still have to use the substance to stay alive. But where we go, we look at the 12 steps, and the one that jumps out to me on a sugar addiction, a tech addiction, is once you get past step one, where you admit you're powerless over this and you're unmanageable, I have to come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And sanity would be believing the truth, acting on the truth. But if you're a Christian, it's about trying to be holy like God. And I remember one of our first conversations, you had heard me give a talk, and you said, why don't you ever talk about holiness? You'd actually heard me several times. And I said, and I think I've said this three times in my life, I don't know.
Mm.
And you gave me some tapes from Tim Keller.
Yeah.
You said you want to listen to these. And where we're going is the consecration process, this of being sanctified more and more by walking with Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't stop our behavior. We don't stop drinking. You do that so you can work on your spiritual walk with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're still drinking, you won't do that. But a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm not drinking. I'm good to go. At 20 years sobriety, the wheels fell off for me, because I really started working on the issues down deep.
Mm-hmm.
Took 20 years. And slowly, the onion gets peeled back. And we're always going to be working on things, but one of the things that you can notice is maybe God convicted you of something and you thought, wow, I didn't think that was a problem. And for me, I'm not joking here, I used to be a real wise guy.
No.
No, really.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, no, a little bit. And That's like the guy mocking John Candy when he said he ate pizzas for his aggression and he was a little overweight.
Mm-hmm.
This scene in
Stripes. Yeah.
And they go, no.
Yeah.
And I realized one day I'm not okay with insulting people. And I used to go, if they couldn't take a joke, it was on them. And,
yeah.
And one day I was like, I don't want to insult people. I got work to do, obviously.
Well, I'm glad you came to that.
But yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
And you go, what about the kind of music I'm listening to?
Those are all good questions, George.
What about the shows I'm watching on TV? I still get that one.
Yeah.
So we got to look at everything.
Amen to that. So we're going to take a break here in just a sec, George, but I do want to quickly just say step two says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And when you are in chaos and insanity, only Jesus can bring you that restoration.
Yeah, I said those step when you were looking at your phone a couple minutes ago. So thank you. Yeah,
so maybe we can cut that out.
Yeah. No, you're fine. It's live radio. But you're exactly right, Bill. And a lot of times we say, well, I need Jesus to help me with this problem. And you're right. But the one who convicted you that you had it is Jesus.
Amen.
He's already in on this.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a little break, and when we come back, our guest tonight, today, this morning, is Crosby.
Yesterday.
Whenever, George. You're going to enjoy his story. We'll be right back.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been.
Not to throw anybody off, but there's a new song on Real Recovery, thanks to George Fraser. You suggested that, didn't you?
You know, I really liked the song, and of course, she died from drinking.
She did. She did not enter rehab.
And I think all of us go, I'm not going to do that. I don't need to do that. And in my life, what I realized is I was wrong. I'm so thankful I got to go three times. And I thought the first time I went, they were going to teach me how to use without getting in trouble. Like, okay, if you get pulled over, here's how you do the line and touch your nose with your head back.
Yeah.
Because telling you to actually quit, any idiot knows that. I want the place where I can use and not get in trouble.
Yeah, you thought they were going to offer you techniques, right?
Totally.
Yeah, well, there you go. I learn something about you all the time.
Well, I had heard that when they ask you to do the alphabet backwards from Z to A,
that would be hard.
That 30% of the people say, I can't do that when I'm sober.
Is that the answer?
No. That's the wrong answer.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if that's true, but I could see where it would be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's bring on our guest. We have Crosby here tonight with us in studio, and he's got a story that is going to not only encourage you, but it's going to also give God a lot of glory. Because that's why we do the show. Crosby, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
Yeah. Well, we are here to hear about you and the story that God has in your life. And so let's start with hearing about you growing up, because we're always interested in that.
Yeah. So, I'm Crosby. I had a pretty good childhood, to be honest. Like, all in all, the way my life turned out is kind of surprising, I feel like, if you look at it on paper, just because... my family, I mean, I have two great brothers, good relationships with both of them. My parents are, I mean, they've always had a good marriage. They've loved each other and they've, expressed love for us. I mean, my entire life. School, I moved around quite a bit. I probably was in like five or six schools throughout my, elementary and middle school experience. But yeah, I mean, I was always kind of like a chatty Cathy in class. So I got in trouble for that kind of stuff. But otherwise paid attention, really enjoyed learning, and I don't know, school was a good experience for me.
What sports?
Oh, yeah, so most consistently I played basketball pretty much all the way up through high school, and then football a little bit, but I dropped off around 10th grade with that. Those are like the two main ones I guess I played.
Yeah, because when George was 9, he was the punt, pass, and kick competition winner, and of course the other kids were very jealous of him.
Really?
And were mean to him because they tried to bully him, because obviously when you're at the top of the heap, you know, it's, I'm What do you look at me like that for?
No, it was tough. Everybody wanted my autograph. And
I get it. I get it. You're nice.
But it was for Edina, though, which is a suburb in Minneapolis that mm-hmm. the chosen people are from.
Yeah, whatever. Right. My point is, Crosby, did you get along well with kids? Did you have any social pressures? Did you feel that there were any kids picking on you, or were mm-hmm. you picking on kids? What was that like?
Yeah, I honestly was always liked, I feel like, growing up. I'm definitely a people pleaser, and that started to show, and I didn't realize that was the case until probably around like 11th or 12th grade. I didn't really like know what that was. I just knew that I was feeling drained, I guess, after I got home from school, because I was trying so hard for people to like me that I was willing to sacrifice getting insulted or joked at because I wanted to be the center of attention to be liked. I would say I had a lot of friends, but not a lot of good friends, just because I wanted everybody to like me. So I was always trying to joke around, and that ended up with me being joked at a lot, which mm-hmm. I ended up feeling really hurt by as time went on, but I didn't realize that until later.
Yeah, and you had a church life growing up, didn't you?
Yeah, so I grew up, went to New Hope Church in New Hope, pretty much from birth until did senior high, junior high, everything. And yeah, I mean, I had a pretty consistent childhood in the church. My parents brought me there every Sunday. I went on a mission trip when I was 12, I believe, 11 or 12, to Anchorage, Alaska with my dad, which is amazing, through the church. And yeah, I mean, all in all, good church experience.
Yeah, George, this sounds like a pretty idyllic situation to me.
Absolutely.
What could be wrong, right? Nothing.
I think he could have played hockey instead of basketball, but other than that, see anything. No, it sounds great. And I think later we're going to reflect back and talk about when you bring your kids up to know the Lord, they can go back to that if they stray.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And we're building a real solid, solid family, church, school, likes to learn. I didn't get that one, did you?
No.
Yeah. I like to have
fun. How was learning going to get us smart, right?
We already were smart. You know, the other thing is wanting people to like you. Yeah. I always felt if they didn't, there was something wrong with them. And I still do.
I know.
Character defect.
I wish that was the case.
Yeah. Character defect.
I know you didn't even mean that to be a joke, which is even funnier to me.
I was definitely the opposite. I feel like there was intrisically something wrong with me if that was... People didn't like me.
Well, it's interesting because with him, there's actually something he would like, you know.
Yeah.
With me, it's just a demand that you do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it's interesting. You wonder, how could this go wrong?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, this is a good story so far. I don't see any chinks in the armor. I don't see where Crosby is going to want to change the way he feels and experiment. It seems like a secure kid with a lot going.
So it might happen to just about anybody then.
I would say that might be mm-hmm. true, that it could happen to just about anybody. Mm-hmm. And in fact, has. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, let's see how long we can be silent here.
Well, you asked the next important question.
Okay. So what changed?
That's a big question.
That was the question?
Yeah.
I could have asked that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was short. We're running out of time, and I wanted to hear it.
It's a simple question, I guess, on the surface, but I feel like it was a very slow process that kind of happened throughout a couple of years. One hiccup that happened in my earlier childhood is I had some sexual abuse that occurred when I was like 6 or 7. So that really messed with my perception of like the world, I guess. It kind of shattered that view that a lot of kids have, where like the world is just a peachy place and nothing can go wrong and mommy and daddy can protect you. And all of those values kind of went away pretty quickly. And I feel like I grew up not like a understanding sense, but more just confused way of looking at the world at that point.
Sure.
And that affected me, I mean, all the way up through now to some degree. It doesn't affect me nearly as much after recent years and having like therapy and stuff. But at the time I got some therapy for it and helped a little, but I mean, definitely did a lot of damage to me.
Well, your body stores that trauma. And I had a trauma guest on and was learning about you can try to deal with things emotionally, and it's important to do that, but your body registers and stores traumatic experiences. So when you say it's something that I've lived with, I look at you and I go, of course it is, because that's how it works. So way to go that you're getting, that you got some help for it. But needless to say, at some point you wanted to change the way you feel. And what was the first introduction to some mood altering drug, chemical or alcohol?
I believe it was the summer going into my junior year, I believe. So I think I just turned 17. It was either junior or sophomore year, but either way, I was with some buddies and we decided, one of our friends, you know, smoked marijuana at the time, and my buddy and I didn't. So, and we were like best friends at the time through middle school and whatnot. We decided, why not try it together? It could be fun. We'd heard like a lot of good things about it. No downsides, because nobody wants to talk to you about that when they're doing it, you know. So we ended up smoking marijuana together in the park, and basically the entire summer going forward, I was probably once a week for the first month, and maybe 2 to 3 times a week the next month. And then it was eventually I was buying my own stuff, started dabbling with like cartridges, not just like the actual marijuana flower, and kind of progressed from there. That was the first experience I had, though.
Okay.
So we can look at it. My guess is the guys that you were hanging with weren't total losers, and you'd probably heard how bad pot is, and you don't want to do drugs. And you see people that you like that are cool guys doing it, you figure, hey, did you get high the first time, or did it take you a couple times?
Yes, honestly, I feel like more of a rare story, because a lot of people I've talked to said they didn't, but I it was very, very intense experience to me, honestly.
What was your feeling about it, and did you go, oh wow, where's this been? I like this.
So basically, I just remember I remember asking my friend distinctly, so like, when is this gonna kick in? And like from there my memory went black for about 15 minutes, and the next thing I know everything was just lucid and crazy. And finally coming around a few hours later, all of a sudden I was like you said, like, where has this been my whole life? And I realized that, like, just, you know, doing that or smoking that for, you know, a few minutes could allow the next few hours to be completely void of deep thoughts and reflection on how messed up I kind of felt on the inside. And just, like, I could basically just bury and avoid the hurt that I was experiencing.
Yeah. Did you guys laugh a lot when you were high?
Yes. Yes, we did.
So a built-in mini vacation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Well, there's a couple dangers here, though. You get the feeling, and then you start seeking the feeling. I want to do this again. But the other thing is, you hear how bad it is, and you got nothing but positives. I like this. We have fun with it. It's not hurting anybody. Once again, our parents and the government overreact.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I didn't see any downsides at the time, and I got to admit, like, the first time I did it following that, all I was doing was thinking about not when I could see my friend again, but when we could get together and go smoke with my other friend. Like, that was the focus of my time hanging out with my other buddy.
Yeah. So there was a mind shift, and it happened quickly. Wow. Okay. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery. Our special guest, Crosby, is in studio with us. And if you are just learning about Faith Radio and maybe just learning about Real Recovery, we'd love for you to go to the website and check it out. You can go to myfaithradio.com. There's a Real Recovery webpage. And you can see George in my picture, which is very dated, by the way. But we have, Yeah, but we have no interest in dating or updating it. We'll be right back. Lots more. Great story tonight, George. Looking forward to hearing more of it.
Really is, and it's interesting. Okay, great parents, going to church, like school, like learning,
like sports.
You know, a couple of my friends that are like, we're gonna smoke some pot, and I like it.
Yeah. Okay. So then,
how does this progress into your daily life?
That's a great question. He went from once a week to all the time, thinking about when can I do it again. And then where does it go from there? Let's ask him. Crosby, where does it go from there?
Yeah, so once I got a taste of that, you know, I feel like with a lot of things, once you get involved in whatever niche, you start to hang around people that are doing the same thing as you. So fast forward, I ended up changing high schools from 10th grade into 11th. So I graduated at a different high school than I started in. And a friend I met there had an Adderall prescription because he had ADHD, but he didn't use it, so he sold it. And I tried it, and within a short amount of time, I think less than a month, I decided I wanted to get my own prescription. So he basically told me how he got his, which was legitimate, but I decided to lie. So through a family doctor and like lying to my parents, I was able to get a prescription for Adderall and Vyvanse by just, you know, throwing a script at the guy, essentially. And that's when it really took off for me because, as a lot of people know who deal with stimulants, those things are crazy addictive. And within a short amount of time, it was taking over my life.
Did you take those as prescribed?
The first time, yes.
So that, one that works. I wonder what two will do.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it began with Adderall once I joined the new high school. And then, I tried psychedelics with the same kid because he was involved in a lot of that kind of stuff. Luckily, I didn't really do anything much harder than that. I tried Vicodin at one point. Just couldn't get my hands on more, but I definitely would have at the time. But yeah, that took me down a road really quickly. I lost a lot of weight because I stopped eating. Just very unhealthy.
Did your parents see anything and go, hey, what's going on?
Honestly, the bulk of the end of my senior year of high school, I managed it decently well. I wasn't doing more than two pills a day probably, but I was still crushing them up and snorting them, which isn't as advised.
That's not on the label, is it?
Definitely not, no. But it really got dark when I went to college in the fall of 2019.
So can we back up a minute? Do you remember a point where you're going when you wake up, am I going to get high today? How am I going to get high today? Were you at that point, or was it just something you did? Because if you're doing the Adderall and you got a prescription, you're going to use it till it runs out. My guess is you're getting high pretty much every day, fair?
Yeah, honestly, at the peak of it, I wasn't even questioning. It was just like my day. Like when I was in college, I basically lasted 2 months in college, and this is kind of ties into that. I'd wake up without even thinking. Within 3 minutes of waking, I'd have crushed an Adderall, snorted it off my desk, taken an Adderall, and then taken a Vyvanse, which is similar if you've ever experienced anything like Adderall.
No, I did cocaine in my day.
Oh, yeah. That happened a couple times too, but that just wasn't accessible and way more expensive, so I just tried not to. But yeah, so that was a two-month period where I lost about 30 pounds. I was eating about once a day, going to the casino couple times a week with buddies.
Where'd you go to school, Vegas?
basically, no, I was at a university in Wisconsin. So, party school.
Yeah. Did you go to Madison?
Stout.
Oh, gosh. Good. We played them in hockey. Okay. But wherever you had gone, you would have found the party guys, wouldn't you?
Yeah. My mom actually has told me, she's like, I knew the second you introduced me to your friends. I met the three guys or four guys on my floor that literally looked like they were doing drugs. Everybody else like just kind of looked like nerdy and like they were trying to be educated. These guys just looked like hoodlums. It was funny.
Again, use the word hoodlum, I love that word.
Henry Hall.
Henry Hall.
The great Henry Hall.
Introduced us to hoodlum.
Were you worried at all that this wasn't good for you, or did that not enter in?
Occasionally, when I was going to bed at like 4 a.m. and the Adderall had mostly worn off, I look in the mirror and see how much different I looked, and it kind of made me realize, this is changing me, but I just didn't care when I was on it, and I was off of it only a couple hours out of my waking moments, so I didn't really think about it too much.
Were you still going to church?
No. I didn't go to church, I don't think, once while I was at college for the 2 or 2.5 months. When I got back from college and lived back at my parents' house for like 4-ish months, I don't know if I went during that time either.
You know, any college, Bill, we're going to find the people who party like we do if the addiction cycle is running. And Stout's a great school. I managed to do this at a Christian school up the street that I don't want to name because I don't want my diploma yanked. And you're powerless to change it. Mm. You might not see it, but you're not going to be changing it. And the Holy Spirit has to convict you a lot of times through consequences. Did you get tossed out of school?
No. Eventually, my family started noticing that I wasn't going to class. I can't remember exactly how. I think I told them a little bit, and then they started to catch on that I was lying. Yeah, there was this one occasion my grandparents came to visit me, and they wanted to meet me at the Dairy Queen that was just kitty corner to my dorm, and they said they'd be there at like 1 o'clock or something, and I didn't go to bed till 4 a.m. I woke up at like 3 p.m. to multiple missed calls. I ran downstairs, like, you know, the stuff in my eyes still barely had clothes on. And I got across the street and they were fuming. And I just told them I slept in on accident. But I was, I mean, yeah, the night before was rough.
Wow. You slept in till 3.
Yeah.
Did you think they bought it at the time? What did you say? I was up late studying?
I don't remember. I think I just told them I slept in. I was up late for some reason or another. I don't think anybody in my family knew the extent, and especially not my grandparents, because I never wanted them to even know that I was not their sweet little kid that they'd known my
entire
life.
No, I get that. Yeah. Did they tell your parents?
Oh, of course. I think they probably called my parents a couple times while they were waiting there at the Dairy Queen.
But there's you trying to please everybody, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once I got back from college, I was there probably until November or so. I got back and stayed there at my house until about February when I got an ultimatum early January where they said basically they started to catch on slowly. They noticed I was taking more and more Adderall. I'd actually get angry at my parents and yell at them like, I need more of this. Like, it's running out. I need it for finding jobs. I need to search stuff up. Like, I needed to be productive. Just, you know, complete lie.
How did you sell coming home from college after a couple months?
I basically told them I think that it wasn't for me. Once my parents visited like a couple of times while I was there, like we met up and I'd go home every once in a while, like every weekend or two. And I think they could see me losing weight too, which is indicative of something, right? So they began
to
worry.
That's smart. Get you home.
Yeah, and my mom and brother, so when they came to pick me up that day and they loaded all my stuff in the car, my brother was looking at me just like, what is wrong? Something is seriously not okay. So
that'd be scary for the parents, Bill.
That'd be very scary.
Not to lay guilt on you, but when we're doing it, we don't even think about that.
No.
It was all about you at that point, wasn't it?
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, where have you reached a point where you need to take a turn? You need to pivot. Mm. And how did you do that?
Honestly, I ended up going to treatments, and it wasn't until I was a little ways into there, but I started to get a little bit of a feeling, okay, maybe I don't have as much control over this as I thought. Because one of the main lessons that I took away from my experience in treatments and everything that I went through, I think that God helped teach me, was that I could lie to myself and I didn't realize that was a thing. I thought that I always had my own best interests at heart, so why would I bother lying to myself in my head, right? Because that's crazy. But I had no idea that I was even capable of that until months into treatment when I realized that the entire time I was joking myself.
And people can tell you that, Bill, but the conviction has to come from the Holy Spirit that this is actually happening. And it's shocking when that happens, isn't it? Do you remember how you felt when you go, whoa, I'm doing that?
Honestly, it hit me pretty quickly. I think I honestly fell to my knees and I started crying. We had an optional worship night once I was at Teen Challenge, the first in the short-term treatment center. Because I think that one is technically not a faith-based one. They have to, for the state's sake, not be, but then like the long-term is completely faith-based. So, there was like an optional thing and I'd go there every couple nights, just, you know, I was familiar with it. One night I just remember hitting my knees and realizing how deep I was in my own filth. And, the tears honestly came, I think, because I realized how much I'd been hurting people and I had no idea I was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
It's a very honest moment when you realize that you are hurting people and then you felt the hurt.
Yep. You know, joy comes in the morning after the dark night, right? And how did that change how you worked at rehab? Did you ratchet it up a couple notches and go, hey, this is a serious deal. I'm going to try now.
Well, initially, we were told that I was going to be at the short-term program for 90 days, which is the maximum you could be there for. But probably about 2 weeks in, we found out that my insurance only covered 28 days. And that also was a little bit of a slap in the face. Cause I have to figure this out in the next 14 days. Like, this isn't going to work. So, about a week before I actually was going to be done there, I spoke with this amazing man at Teen Challenge, and Tom Rose, just one of the most amazing, loving people I've ever met. And, we had a long talk, a difficult conversation, but we ended up deciding that I should go to the long-term program.
How long is long term?
It's technically a 13-month program, but
whoa.
Yeah. So I inpatient, by the way. So I ended up showing up in February, about I think February 21st, I believe, in 2020, which was just on the edge where I could make it in about 12 months. It was like a weird layover on the calendar. But, yeah, so I was there for, I think, 12 months and 5 days.
And that was all faith-based. And tell us about how you understood God's purpose in your life.
That took a little bit.
Maybe it's still a work in progress.
Yeah, honestly.
For most of us, it is.
Yeah, the purpose thing, I'm still working. I think, honestly, sharing my message is definitely part of it because I wrestled with a lot of, like, why me, which I think a lot of people do when they don't want to accept the blame, you know? And I feel like that was the first several months of the program is I was sitting there thinking, like, well, why me? Why am I going through all this kind of stuff, and how do I get out of this? But I had to take responsibility for my actions before I could start moving forward in that department.
So you go in out of an avoidance of pain, negative consequences.
Yeah.
When did the light come on, and how did it come on? What were you doing? Were you reading a lot of the Bible? Did you have study groups that you were going to? What changed? And when did the light come on where you go, hey, this is what I want to do?
Like I said, probably about the 1 month mark is when I hit my knees and asked Jesus to be my personal savior again. Cause I think I grew up in my family's faith my entire life. Honestly, I don't know if I had a personal relationship with Jesus. It was just, you know, I had the head knowledge of, like, you know, Bible school and all that kind of stuff, but, it really hit me hard in treatment. And, a couple months in, I really started realizing, like, when I was actually putting in hours, studying the Bible, being in small groups, that I was seeing transformation, and that had never occurred at that level or that speed in my entire life in any area except for when I was doing that stuff.
What was the fellowship like when you're around other like-minded people that love Jesus and they want to be transformed by the word?
It was, honestly, it spoiled me a little bit. I didn't realize until I got out how uncommon that is.
Yeah.
but being surrounded by, you know, chaplains and, you know, other brothers in there who were believers, it was just a amazing, loving environment. Like, I felt so supported, and everybody there had a similar life experience on top of a faith, which, I mean, multiplied it. So that was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
You hit on the key there, Bill. A lot of the guys that we work with go in, they don't even like themselves, and they wind up liking other people. And when guys leave the group because they graduate, they miss them, and they realize something has happened, a heart change, that we go from avoiding a behavior to a heart change that only comes from God, where I want to do what God wants me to do. Do you remember that process for you, how that happened? Did you notice, like, when guys left, you missed them, or you were looking forward to, hey, Tom Rose is speaking today, or I'm meeting with him? And, I, you know, you get excited, and you go, where did that come from?
It was hard because every single month, like, another group of guys graduates. So it was hard building those relationships and seeing them go and really hoping the best for them because, you know, not everybody makes it after that attempt, right? Not everybody gets it right or figures it out. And I think I'm lucky to have the support base I have around me. That's helped me maintain my sobriety for about 2.5 years now.
Super.
A little over 2.5 years. And I don't know, man. Once it kind of hit me, it was like an avalanche of just like this deep desire to dig into the Bible and build relationships because, like, the guys that had, you know, decided to give their life to Christ, they all seem to be on fire. And, like, Pastor Rich, man, there's so many amazing guys there that were just like, they'd speak and you just feel so amped up and you just wanted to learn more about Jesus. So
that's how we feel around Faith Radio here every day. We're all pretty amped up to learn more about Jesus.
I tell you, no, seriously, I go to a treatment center 2 days a week, and guys tell me, when I got here, I had to do this. But 2 months in, they go, I want to do it. What's happening? I go, God's changing your heart. You worship your way out of addiction for his glory and your joy, and you see it happening. And when a guy leaves, a lot of these guys are crying, you know, they're there for 3 months together. And one guy told me, he goes, what's happening to me? I go, the Holy Spirit, brother, you know?
Yeah.
And it happened to you. You look forward to doing the work.
Yeah. Good observation. Great story, Crosby. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear more of his story. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We will be right back.
We'll be right back.
Great story tonight, George. Crosby's telling a great story of what God's done in his life.
It really, and what's cool is we always talk about on this program, Crosby, God doesn't save us from our sins and our addiction without having a job for us to do. And if you're in recovery, you got a purpose. And your purpose is to help other people get sober and to find Christ. And after you got through Teen Challenge, 13 months?
Close to, yeah.
12.
If you were listening. Full roundup, it sounds better.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying. I was listening. He said 12.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not coming down on you, George, for not
I thought
listening.
He said 13, because no, I always put myself in that position, like, I wouldn't want to do that. I don't want to go to rehab.
Yeah, it was like a 13-month program.
Traditionally, yeah, most
traditionally,
people.
But it started right around February of 2020, and somehow it got worked into a 12-month program.
Kind of like the kids that are a little old for the grade, they get pushed over
yeah,
a year,
exactly.
You know? Similar.
Yeah.
I got held back.
You didn't get held back.
I got redshirted is what I call it. So when you got out, were you scared?
I remember being very excited, honestly. I wouldn't say it was false confidence, but I actually had a slip up. So I got in there in February, did the month in February through like middle of March, and then went to the long-term program. And in July, we had a four-day pass. There's one in a four-day pass in July, one in December for Christmas. And we got to go out and be with our family and just kind of give the guys like a breather. A lot of guys just, if they don't have any family, I'm not really sure what they do, but people just need, time out of this. Sometimes it's going to be pretty intense. But anyways, within about 10 hours of leaving the building, I had smoked weed with some friends. And that was a very humbling experience because this was my first treatment I'd ever been to in my life. And the first 3 to 4 months I was in there, I nailed it. I thought I was going to be sober the rest of my life. No problem. I was like, why are these guys all back in here for the 10th, 15th time in treatment? Like, what's so hard about it? But I found out pretty quickly just how easily you can slip up if you let your guard down.
Yeah, I don't have it now. And it's a day at a time. And what is it, John 15:5? Billy, apart from me, you can do what?
Nothing.
And so when we think we have it, we're wrong. And I'm glad you learned that, apparently.
Yeah, no, I'm honestly, as weird as it sounds, like I'm extremely grateful that happened to me, or that I did that, I guess would be a better term. But I learned so much from it that I feel like I'm not as certain that I would have maintained my sobriety as long as I have now if I hadn't had that little slip up while I was in there, because I just learned so much in that. I almost needed like a reality check. And I think, I'm not saying God caused me to, but he knew I was going to. And I think he really used that experience to help me.
The dangerous thing with going back to using a slip is sobriety losing its priority, is a lot of people don't survive them. And so I'm an old-fashioned counselor. It's not part of your recovery. But I used after treatment, my third treatment. And I learned a lot from it. And so do you. And I'm glad God spared you. Because if you're listening tonight and you're thinking about going out, and we do that, call your mentor. Pray to God and work at it, because it never works. I've never met anybody that had sobriety and went back to using where it worked. And I've never met anybody who had sobriety and went back to using and told me it was a waste of time, their sobriety. And I look at that and listen to it. So I'm glad you're okay. So what happened after that?
Yeah, I answered back in. I was put on, like, air quotes, red when I went back in, which essentially means your time in the program stops. So technically, I didn't advance in the program for 2 weeks, and I lost restrictions. And that definitely gave me time to read my Bible more, talk to mentors in there, people who had been through all that kind of stuff before. And I mean, that helped.
So they made you stop where you were in the program because you used? My goodness, Bill. What kind of place is that? You're lucky they didn't make you start over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened to some guys.
What do you mean by that, George?
Well, a lot of times, if you're in a program and you go use, you get booted. And, like, it's not an option. And my guess is you had done well, and they thought it would be more harmful to do it. But it really got your attention, didn't it?
Yeah, for
sure. That's what it was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thanks for that.
And the other thing is, that's a safe environment there. So all the people there, when somebody uses comes back, that's a danger to them psychologically, at least, right? So you must have been doing well. And good to humble yourself and go back. You didn't have to do that.
Yeah, it crossed my mind. I was wondering what was waiting for me back when I got back crossed there.
Good honesty.
And I walked in because I also had, like, you know, vape and nicotine will set off a red flag on the test as well. So I walked in. I was like, hey, do you still have to test me if I, like, I'm just admitting to have done this? They're like, I mean, yeah, but nonetheless, yeah. So it was definitely a learning experience.
Did you know beforehand you were going to get tested when you got back?
Yeah, that was a pretty common thing because guys would randomly get, like, passes for various, I mean, like a family emergency happens, you know, a guy could leave and come back, but they get tested right away.
And yet you still use. You had to know you were going to get nailed, right?
Yep. Yep.
It's
as
powerful.
Insane as it sounds, is. Yeah.
Crosby, I'm so curious as to what you were thinking on that four-day pass that led you to physically pick up a joint and smoke it. What were you thinking? You should have been on high alert. This is the new me, and the new me doesn't do this.
Yeah. My first mistake was immediately going to hang out with two of my friends that I had, you know, previously spent a lot of time smoking with. And they knew I was in this. They were very supportive of me the entire time I was in there. But I manipulated them when we were sitting around. I was like, hey, like, just so you guys know, next time, like tomorrow when I go hang out with this other friend, I'm going to go smoke with him. So, like, we might as well just break the seal and do it together just for old time's sake because I'm going to do it tomorrow. Like, I'm going to fail my test when I get back anyway. So, might as well be with you guys first. And that was a lie. I wasn't planning on with my other friend. I just wanted to.
Okay. I've been sober 38 years plus. There are times when using seems like a good idea to me. One of the gifts of recovery is you get like the thorn in your flesh where you have to be walking with Christ every day. It's a blessing. And Bill, it sounds insane because it is, but at a certain point, using seems like a good idea. And when you're addicted, you lose the power of choice. And what you get when you're in recovery is you get that back. Never forget that. I hope I don't.
Yeah. What about some of the deception that you used in the past and even with your friends that day? Is there some of that still in your head?
I don't believe so. I mean, I feel like I've been honest enough with myself. I had to basically put myself in a weird position and tell everybody in my life that I couldn't handle myself, essentially, and I had to be vulnerable and go do that. So I think that really made it hard for me, even if I wanted to, because everybody in my life knows my story at this point and is very supportive of that. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean.
But you're out of Teen Challenge on a four-day break, and you have convinced your friends who are supporting you in your recovery that you're going to smoke dope the next day, so we might as well just get it done today as well. Mm-hmm. So you're able to manipulate them to get what you wanted, and that's something that I just think probably you need to keep your finger on the pulse of as well.
Yeah.
Fair?
It's very powerful. Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to is I'm powerless over this. I might be really good at everything else in my life. I got a thorn in my flesh. What do you do now when you think about using? How do you get past that?
Good question. The number one thing that I kind of developed, like my coping mechanisms, I guess you could call it, is I have this one picture in my head of this time when I was sitting on my couch next to my mom having a panic attack because she was going to be gone for the evening with my dad, and I had no drugs in the entire house. I searched the medicine cabinets. There was no liquor, nothing, and I was essentially screaming and crying and begging her not to leave. And every time I feel that way, like I want even a hint of wanting to try something, I picture myself in that position and how empty I felt and how much I wanted to die.
Yeah. That's interesting. Thank you, Crosby, for telling us your story. And
great
having you here, and to God be the glory. All right, Georgie, that's another award-winning episode of Real Recovery.
Good night, Bill.
If you missed any of it, head over to myfaithradio.com. Check it out. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next time. And so I have to say before I go. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.